You are listening to Charmed City, a podcast about interesting people doing interesting things in and around Baltimore. I am here today with Judy Neff, owner and brewer of Checker Spot Brewing Co. Judy, how are you?
Good. Great.
Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Yeah.
So I guess I kind of always like to ask Judy, who is Judy? Who is Judy Neff?
I love beer. All about beer. So before I started the brewery, I was crazy into different kinds of craft beer, different styles, trying everything I could get my hands on. And so it sort of, that sort of morphed into what I do 100% of the time now.
Yeah.
So.
Well, because also I read you have like a science background. So yeah. You kind of came from the brewing from a more of like a scientific approach.
Yep. Yep.
That's really interesting. Like how do you think, you know, having that scientific background kind of helped play into the creation of, you know, Checker Spot?
Yeah, it definitely helped. So, you know, I started home brewing about 15 years ago.
Oh, it was
about
cool.
13 years before we started the company. And, you know, it made me sort of not afraid of the science side of everything. Mm-hmm. So I was sort of, you know, able to delve into, you know, brewing theory and hop oils and the chemistry behind that and the water chemistry and things like that that were sort of interesting
right.
to me to sort of geek out over.
Yeah. So you said you started brewing like 15 years ago
mm-hmm.
and then decided to start Checker Spot when?
Yeah. So, I started home brewing and then I started getting a little more involved in the, sort of craft beer scene as one of the co-founders
in Baltimore. Okay.
In Baltimore. So I was one of the co-founders of Baltimore Beer Babes. And then also got really into Baltimore Beer Week and always hosted mm-hmm. Events for that. And sort of got me, you know, getting to know a lot of the craft brewers and brewery owners in town who are amazing people. And it's just an amazing community.
Yeah.
And just a wealth of knowledge that everybody's been amazing to share. And so that sort of evolved into... you know, more and more. Mm-hmm. It sort of had a snowball effect until, you know, one day I, you know, didn't like what I was doing and the thought crossed my mind and sort of started looking into it more and more. Like, is this something I could actually do?
Yeah.
Like, could you actually like still pay the mortgage? and yeah, so.
So what year did it go from a home brewery to a real brewery?
So the whole process, so we opened a year ago, June 30th,
mm-hmm.
And the process probably started about 2 years before that.
Okay.
So sort of starting to think about it seriously mm-hmm. and then sort of get the ball rolling.
Yeah. And so we're actually currently doing this interview in the brewery space, right overlooking outside. I see M&T Bank Stadium. We're kind of right on the outskirts of Fed Hill on like what, Sharp and
Austin.
Yep. Yeah, and it's a really beautiful space, and it's really cool to be here. I'm excited to just, like, be doing this. I want to rewind on what you just, I want to unpack that story. What is the Baltimore Beer Babes?
Oh, so we started it in, I got to get my date right. I want to say 2011, 2012. Mm-hmm. So been around for about a little over 7 years. And it was really started with the intent to get more women involved in craft beer. So there's always an educational component in our events as well as sort of the community. So getting women together, you know, who have a similar interest in craft beer. But to sort of learn a little bit, you always, you know, want people
right.
to take something home from it each time as well as build you know, camaraderie and relationships. And it's been just amazing to see sort of back when we started it, you know, women weren't a big driving force in craft beer, which, you know, that's definitely changed now. You know, you can walk into any tap room, go to Max's, and, you know, you see women ordering all sorts of different beers, you know, dark, light, happy.
Yeah.
It's not all just fruit beers or things mm-hmm. like that anymore. That was sort of the stereotypical.
Yeah. So what do you think changed that allowed, I don't want to say allowed, that's not the right word, but like what changed that enabled women to feel more, I don't know if it's empowered or just desire to order, you know, more craft style beers.
So I think a big thing is that craft breweries are becoming much more prevalent now. So, you know, while in Maryland, we don't have, you know, an insane number, we still have a good number, you know, nothing close to anything on the West Coast or North Carolina or Virginia or mm-hmm. places like that. But, we're definitely, you know, up and coming. So I think just the availability of all these really interesting styles of beer, you know, you go to a brewery, you know, and there's always going to be something mm-hmm. interesting. So we'll have some staples, yeah. but then some crazier styles. So it sort of gets people experimenting a little more and more open to trying different things. So when you thought, oh, I don't like dark beers, and then people will have our stout and mm-hmm. they love it. Or, you know, hazy IPAs, I think, have been really instrumental with getting people into hoppy beers, because hoppy beers, you know, IPAs were always this bitter, you know, strong, sometimes sweet, but just very, very bitter.
And that's the train, if you guys can hear it.
The train can get really loud sometimes.
It went off during my set when I did a show here.
But yeah, so it's sort of more approachable, so it's not a bitter IPA. It's sort of tropical and tropical flavors from the hops mm-hmm. and sort of softer. So it introduces people to styles that they previously thought they didn't like, that now they do start to like, and sort of that has a snowball effect as well.
Right.
So once your mind gets changed once, you're more open to doing it again.
Yeah, I mean, that's really cool. And I do want to, I do enjoy talking about like women in brewing, because it's obviously for historically been a male dominated thing.
Well, historically, or, it was women.
Right, right. But like, I would say
back when
of
it was
recent,
in the house. Like, yeah. Once it became industrialized, mm-hmm. It sort of moved from a women's role in the house to sort of in the industrial large scale manufacture, you know, with men for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah. So why is it important to you to empower women to get involved in whether that's the actual brewing process or just tasting new beers? Why is that important to you?
You know, it's just for any different kind of people, you know, diversity is always a good thing. You know, the more people with different backgrounds coming together to experience sort of a shared experience is always going to be improved. And so, you know, to expand it out beyond, you know, the stereotypical sort of white male.
Yeah. The me's.
Yeah. I was always going to say with the beard.
Yeah. You know, I fit the bill.
But, yeah, so anytime that can branch out, you're going to get sort of people who like different styles. So that's going to cause breweries to get more creative and expand, you know, mm-hmm. their repertoire. And
yeah.
it just sort of all sort of comes together. Like
that makes sense.
Yeah.
So where does the name Checker Spot Brewing come from?
So the Checker Spot, the Baltimore Checker Spot is the Maryland State Butterfly.
Oh, cool.
So which makes more sense if now for our logo.
Yeah, now
our bearder fly. but yeah, we sort of picked that just because of sort of our dedication to sort of all things local. So in the neighborhood, mm-hmm. as well as sort of locally in Maryland. You know, we always have some beers on that are local ingredients. Have all local ingredients. So that's really important to us. And then it's sort of that relationship we have with nature, that, you know, we're in the heart of the city, but sort of without nature and these amazing ingredients, mm-hmm. there is no amazing beer. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I like that name. So, you know, you talked about, you know, Maryland, being inspired by Maryland, being inspired by Baltimore. What is it about Baltimore specifically, or I guess Maryland specifically, that has inspired you to create these beers?
Yes, Baltimore is great. It's,
yeah,
you
I
know,
think
I've
so.
Moved around a lot growing up and even into sort of young adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved here in 2003 for graduate school and had no intentions of staying. I was going to do my 5 years and roll out. and I just loved it. So it's all the different neighborhoods. It's a great place to live. You know, it's that small Baltimore is true, where you always see people you know, mm-hmm. no matter where you go. Everybody is sort of one degree of separation.
Yeah.
And you know, with all the different neighborhoods that really have a strong identity. So that's what, like, our stomping ground is sort of reminiscent of that.
Like, yeah.
for sort of the South Baltimore area. But yeah, so draw a lot of inspiration from that.
Yeah, sort of
really strong bond.
Ties
to the neighborhoods.
Yeah, and with that, like, why was it important for you guys to start? I mean, I'm sure you looked at facilities all around the city, but like, or even outside of the city, but in the end, you ended up, you know, posting up shop here in South Baltimore. Why was it important for you to, you know, have a brewery in Baltimore City?
So my husband and I both live in Baltimore City. We actually live over by Patterson Park.
Okay.
And so that was a number one requirement, was remaining in the city. So we did not expand any search outside of the city. So it was just a non-starter, like non-option.
I actually really love
to hear that. So we're really dedicated to the city and doing everything we can to just make the city a better place rather than, you know, just leave it and go out to the county or go somewhere where you know, that things might be a little bit easier. But it's just the love of the city. We're staying here.
That's awesome. And you talked earlier about the Baltimore beer community, the brewing community. What, I know you said it's very supportive and, you know, they helped you out and you learned from people and just got involved in that. But like, what does that community look like? What does that consist of?
So it's really cool. There's sort of the crew that really started everything back with Hugh Sisson, who went from Sisson's to the first, I guess, brew pub in Baltimore. And he left that to then open Heavy Seas. Volker Stewart, who was one of the owners of Brewers Art. So these breweries that got started back in the 90s that have really been around for a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, Mike McDonald who now owns Key and brews an owner brewer at Key Brewing, was up at Red Brick Station in White Marsh. You know, people who have been really doing this for a long time. Greg, who was at Waverly, who's now at Inverness. He used to be, you know, a bunch of people used to actually work at Baltimore Brewing Company back in the 90s.
Yeah.
So, you know, these people who have really been in it from the beginning, when there weren't very many breweries and people didn't know to go to a brewery, you know, brew pub or visit a brewery. And you couldn't have it. There weren't tap rooms. You couldn't do that. So sort of everything they went through to pave the way, you know, they could have done one of two things, sort of held everything
to themselves
and to themselves and be like, you know, we worked really, and they did, they worked really hard to change the laws to make it where someone like me can just come along and open a brewery, you know, and not have to go through sort of the same struggles that they did. It's still really hard.
Any business.
What they had to do was definitely a lot harder. And so instead of keeping it all to themselves and trying to make it harder for everyone else to get into, brewing, they really did the opposite and opened their arms, you know, you want to come brew with us? you want me to take a look at your recipes? Anything they can do to help, because it's the one field really anymore. I think it's probably the only one where people work together. So if more people like craft beer,
more people are
going to go to breweries and tap rooms and drink more craft beer. So, you know, if somebody has a great time over at Diamondback, they're probably going to come here. If someone has a horrible time over there and says, oh, craft beer people suck and I don't like this, they're probably not going to go to another brewery.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, we all help each other by, you know, we're trying to get people to convert from drinking Budweiser to craft beer, not from, you know, don't go to that brewery,
right?
Come only here.
That's super interesting, because like I come from a restaurant background, and you know, worked at various bars and restaurants through like high school and college, and I definitely don't think, I think some of the time certain restaurants and places will be cohesive and like, you know, our bar will go and hang out at another bar. But a lot of the time it's way more competitive than that.
Yeah.
And it's like, we want to do better, especially I would say in the restaurant industry. Like I worked at an Italian place. We hated the other Italian place, you know, like we weren't going to help them out.
Yeah.
So it's cool to hear that it's more cohesive and it's more of like a unit rather than like, you know, screw those guys over at Diamondback.
Yeah, and or, only come here.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, go try different beers. See which ones you like. You know?
Yeah. And I think, so I was out in Denver earlier in the year, and they were really nice as well. And then they were like, yeah, like they like we would start at one brewery and be like, where should we go next? Yeah. And they were, you know, try this, try this. We have a guy who works here and there. Like,
yeah. And we do the same thing. We, you know, people are visiting from out of town. They say, where should we go? It's, you know, we've got Suspended. We've got Diamondback right by us. Go up to, you know, you can walk up to Brewer's Art for, and you know, in there with dinner.
Yeah.
Things like that, which are, and people have sent, you know, we've seen people here because people from other places have sent them to Checker Spot.
That's awesome.
So it is really, it's nice to be in a community like that. So, you know, science is the complete opposite. It's, you know, the worse you can make somebody else look, the better you look. Like, you're right, they're wrong. Like, your research is right, not theirs. And, you know, again, same thing like restaurants. Sometimes there's some collaborative spirit, but all in all, it's, you know, pretty negative, you know, can be very negative. And so, yeah, it just makes for a lot happier.
Everybody.
Happier life.
Community,
yeah.
Yeah. yeah, that's awesome. So I'm currently drinking a delicious sour. What am I drinking here?
So you're drinking Wrong Side of the Tracks.
Wrong Side of the Tracks.
And that's one of our beers that has 100% local ingredients.
Cool.
So we get malt. So the barley we get from Chesapeake Malting, which is up in Havre de Grace. Mm-hmm. And then the wheat we get from Dark Cloud Malt House, local. The hops were from Bullfrog Farm. The yeast we actually get. The yeast and then the lactic acid, the souring bacteria from a local guy, Jasper Yeast.
Sweet.
So everything down to the yeast and that is local.
It's all, cool.
And then the big thing where we really push for local usage is with our fruit. My partner Steve does a lot of sourcing of local fruits. So he's a lot of relationships with a lot of farms and has done a lot of farming type things himself. And so he knows, you know, when what different seasons are and what's good. And so this has local sweet and sour cherries in it. And so we actually juice everything in-house.
Oh, whoa.
So we do not use extracts or purees. We use all fresh pressed local fruit.
Oh, that's awesome.
And any of our fruited beers that you'll see.
And obviously the name being inspired by the train track right here.
Yeah.
Are your beers, they're pretty amply named. They have like local inspired names and stuff. Yeah.
A lot of them do that, or like sort of paying homage to the beer where it came from. And then, you know, we do have some that are silly. So like the New England IPA series, we get a little sort of crazy with the names. So Invisible Pink Unicorn. So it's one of those like spaghetti monster type.
Yeah.
That's, you know, if it's invisible, how do you know it's pink? So we do some like silly stuff like that.
That's fun.
And, like the one we have on now is Psycho Haze.
And how many beers do you typically have on tap?
We have about 13.
13?
Yep.
And are those constantly rotating based off of the season? Do you have like one or two that are like consistently on?
Yeah,
like, how does that work?
We keep some consistent ones on. So Juniperus, our IPA, which happens to be my favorite beer.
Yeah, I've also had that. That's all over the city, right?
Yeah. Most of our beers are. Juniperus is, again, that's probably just for a selfish reason it's always on tap, because I want it to always be on tap.
Well, you have the luxury of being able to do that.
Keeper Stout, so our nitro milk stout, that's brewed with local crab shells. So a play off an oyster stout.
That's cool.
So it's a crab stout. Mm-hmm. And we get all the shells from J.M. Clayton's, which is a fifth generation crab processor out in Cambridge. They think we're totally insane.
but they're paying them.
There you go. Here you go. Here's some crab shells.
Yeah.
That is always on top. You know, so I always wanted to have sort of a dark beer, always available year round. And then there's a couple beers that we do some minor changes on. So the Wrong Side of the Tracks that you're drinking, we normally have our sour is called Locally Delicious. And that we sort of have the same base recipe. It's a little lower alcohol. It's closer in the 5% range versus like the high sixes.
Mm.
But we rotate the fruit that goes into that. Our Saison, the Saison de Fleur, we rotate the flower that goes into that. So right now we have rose. We've done chamomile and elderflower, cool. things That's like really that that are really, yeah. really fun. And the one funny thing is if you've had the Stomping Ground Pale Ale, the idea with that was to rotate an experimental hop, so really highlight an experimental hop. Well, the first one we used, it's this experimental 07270, so no, not doesn't even have a name. And it was just too good, and I like it too much, yeah. that, again, selfishly decided that that's just going to always be on tap because
it works.
I want to drink it.
Yeah.
You know, but always making sure we have a sour, always having something light, always having some, you know, malt forward mm-hmm. options. So it's not just IPAs, yeah. Not just sours, you know, so really trying to have a range mm-hmm. of beer styles. People like different things.
That's, yeah, I think that's really cool. Especially like I think I might be weird for loving sours as much as I do. Mm-hmm. Like I love sours, and a lot of times I go places and they are like, no, we don't have yeah. one. And I'm like, well,
you're like, but I want one.
Yeah. Or it's like, well, we have this tart. I'm like, that's not the same.
Yeah. Yeah. I like drinking different.
Yeah.
So I don't always want to drink the same beer either. Like I love hoppy beers, but I don't want to always drink a hoppy beer. Uh-huh. You know, I drink the Pilsner that I'm drinking now a lot.
That's awesome. That's super. I mean, it's just great to hear about the process of everything. In terms of processing, like you said, your beers are, you know, all throughout the city. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about like the process in which are those canned or are they all draft? Is it all draft?
So it's all draft. All so draft. My husband, Rob, does all of our sales and distribution. Mm-hmm. So I think we're in about 80 places around the city, a little bit in the county. And then here and there, we sort of get into Anne Arundel County a little bit and, you know, sort of closer areas. But since he's doing all the distribution, you know, we have to sort of keep it a little
local,
just for a sheer distance. Mm-hmm. So it's all, we do all draft. We've done a canning run previously, but that was all for sale in the tap room.
I imagine the canning process is also a lot more difficult in terms of like rules and regulations.
No. It's just physically doing it. So you have to stockpile all the cans. We don't have a canning machine.
Right.
So we have a mobile canner come in, you know, so it's very expensive mm-hmm. to do canning runs like that if you're just doing sort of one-offs and don't have your own canning line. So for us, it was more doing it for fun. So we'll probably be doing something again like that soon. But for us, it's just fun. It's just cool to have your beer in a can.
It's just a side project kind of thing
exactly.
to go along with everything
exactly.
else that you guys are doing here.
At some point down the road, it would be uh-huh. amazing to have a, you know, even just a small canning line. So a lot of breweries are doing that, getting sort of small canning lines and doing limited runs.
And you'd be able to just do that all here?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you brought up Rob, and you also said your partner, the third partner, Steve.
Yeah.
So it's the three of you started this together?
Yeah.
You know, how did that come to fruition?
So when I started running numbers and decided that, okay, this is something that mm-hmm. I actually, you know, this could work. Rob had been doing house rehab. So he ran NEF rehab. So sort of remodeling homes in Baltimore, you know, ones that needed to be completely broken mm-hmm. down and rebuilt.
Yeah.
So he's really dedicated to improving the city and staying in the city as well. And sort of that entrepreneurial spirit he was able to bring over here.
Mm-hmm. So he's kind of the business side of it?
For the sales and distribution.
Yeah, okay,
person.
Yeah.
So the two of us starting it together, you know, starting something so big, it just helps to have a third person. So uh-huh. we knew from the beginning we wanted to have somebody else that, you know, say something happened to a family member and both of us needed to go uh-huh. somewhere, you know, somebody needs to be able to sort of help out uh-huh. when, you know, different things are going on. God forbid we could ever go anywhere together.
even just you want to go to vacation.
Yeah, exactly. So we sort of started talking to people and we'd known Steve for a very long time. We met him through Heavy Seas. So he started...
You and your husband were working at Heavy Seas?
No. So he started the cask program at Heavy Seas.
Oh, cool.
And so we had met him at different beer events and just sort of knew him through the local mm-hmm. beer community.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we definitely knew each other, but, it was trying to find someone also who was at the right time in their life that they also wanted to jump both feet first, you
into
know,
something like this
and be sense. Able to afford, you know, be able to actually take that,
be a third
that
partner,
leap,
yeah.
like be a partner and, you know, all be in this together. And so, we ended up meeting, through Chris Anderson at Maryland Homebrew. She sort of tossed up that suggestion and we sat down and had a beer and decided to do it.
Yeah, it's cool. You were talking about the Heavy Seas Cask program.
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
So cask beer is that sort of traditional British style of beer that you think of like this pub beer, where it's lower carbonation. So it's when it's carbonated inside the cask. So the cask is just like a small keg looking, you know, it's just a vessel.
Right. Okay.
It can be wood or metal. You know, all of ours are stainless. But so you're taking beer and adding different things to it. So you can add other hops, some honey, some, you know, anything you want. And then it carbonates inside the cask. So we don't force carbonate it like you do for all the rest of our beers. And what that does is the carbonation's a lot lower. We actually serve our casks cooler. They're refrigerated. So it's sort of what got a bad reputation as being warm, flat beer. It's just lower carbonated, and we do keep it cold, but it's sort of that British style. And so what happens with when you don't have as much carbonation is a lot of the flavors come through. So they tend to be sort of richer flavored style. So it's really cool to have something on cask that's also on draft to be able
to
tell the difference.
Oh, that's, it's interesting. That's really interesting. All right, here's just a general beer question.
Yeah.
What's nitro?
Oh, so it's when you nitrogenate a beer. So instead of force carbonating it, you're putting super high pressure nitrogen on it, which because nitrogen doesn't go into solution, and so that then pushes the beer out. And you see that sort of Guinness is sort of the prototypical example of you know that rich creamy beer and always has like the cascading bubbles.
Yeah, I noticed stouts are often on nitro.
Yeah, so it really softens it. So it makes beer taste almost velvety.
Mm-hmm.
So people have been putting IPAs on it. It's not my personal preference because I like an IPA to be crisp and refreshing.
Me as well.
Not like a soft velvety IPA. Whereas something you know like British malty beers take it very very well on cask. You know, IPAs on cask, we have one on cask right now, and it's really interesting because it becomes much more flavorful. So it's something totally different. So a lot of the like New England style IPAs, so sort of the IPAs that people do like that are these softer, type beers, it enhances sort of that softness. So as people are moving towards these like velvetier
beers.
IPAs,
yeah.
That can be popular too, but sorry, on nitro, we don't have the IPA. I'm getting my cask.
It's okay.
But yeah, so the stout on nitro, it just really softens it. It makes it this smooth, luxurious flavor on your mouth. That it can be a really low alcohol. So it's under 5%, and it does not. It drinks like a much higher alcohol beer.
Got it. Yeah, that was for me. That one was for me. So you are how do you pronounce this? Cicerone.
Yeah.
what is that?
So the best way to describe it is sort of closer to a sommelier for beer.
And how did you get that certification?
So, I got it pretty early on when they started the program. So there's different levels. So you can be like a certified beer server, which is easy. You just take, it's like online. You do 20 questions or something. And then for the certified Cicerone, which was the next level, it's a 3-hour test that they would administer different places in the country. So it's from anywhere from understanding draft line, you know, serving the beer to the history of different beer styles, history of, you know, ingredients, what ingredients go into what beers, things like that. So it's really a broad range. So that's what I'm a certified Cicerone. And now they have, they've had a master's Cicerone. So it's this like crazy 3-day test, very low passing rate. There's only a handful of master Cicerones in the world, I think. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of, it's these three tiers that are like wildly different.
Yeah. So which tier are you kind of that second?
The middle. Yeah.
So you love beer.
Yes.
What, like when did you, or like, what was it that like inspired you that was like, you know what, this is something that I know I love.
Just from doing it. It's just the passion and excitement every time, you know, wanting to try different styles of beer. And yeah, that's why Max is it's great. You know, you can go there and try any style of beer you want, learn about all these crazy.
And that's Max's Tap House in Fells Point. Just going to clarify that.
I just sort of try different styles of beer. So, you know, when you're that excited about things like that, but it might be a good career choice.
Yeah, I think everybody secretly wants to get involved in beer, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, over the past, I don't know, 15, 20 years, there's been this giant growth, right, in the craft beer community nationally. And I would say in the past, what, 5-10 years, it's been blowing up even more locally. Mm-hmm. What about, why is it that we've seen this national boom? And then why is it that we've seen it even more on a local level, Baltimore City and Maryland beyond?
Yeah, I mean, the easy answer is that people finally started tasting good beers and realized that they liked them. Mm-hmm. So that sort of one thing led to another nationally. Obviously, West Coast was way, way, way ahead of everybody else.
As they typically are.
On that type of thing, yeah. So it really exploded there. And, you know, as people are more fluid going back and forth, you know, people bring things with them. And so it just is going to naturally expand to the rest of the country. Here, the big change came in 2013 when the laws changed to actually allow a tap room. So before, so like Heavy Seas is a good example. They had a tap room, they offered brewery tours, but they couldn't sell beer there, right? So you're paying all these people to run brewery tours and have all these people in, but they can't, you can't make any money from it, right? So all you're doing is spending money. By law, all of your beer had to be distributed by a third party distributor, which is a huge cost. So you think about cuts at all the levels. So you're having to go through a distributor, they take their cut. It has to then go to retail, so they're taking a huge cut, you know. So if you think about even back then, a six pack that cost $5 or $6, the amount of money that the brewery is actually seeing from that is very, very low. So once they changed the laws to allow for, you know, limited service in a tap room and limited distribution, it allowed smaller breweries to be able to start up because, you know, a lot of people can't put an amazing amount of money and capital into something and not see any returns. You know, people got to pay mortgages, like not see any returns. I think people weren't seeing returns for like 5 or 6 years. Because the problem is you have to get bigger to make more. So then you're putting more capital in.
Right.
And it's this sort of cycle that continues where eventually, yeah, you become big and can be very successful. But to get there, it was really difficult. So being able to have a tap room where you're controlling your beer, you control where it goes, how it gets to where it's going, the conditions under which all that is happening.
You can add food.
It just makes it a much more viable business model.
Okay.
Where you can make something and sell it yourself versus.
So then in 2013, did it immediately boom or was it like, you know?
I mean, it took people a little while to get things going, but I mean, yeah, that's a bunch of breweries in Maryland then started opening up probably, you know, 2014, 2015. Like it just sort of started then because it became a viable thing to do.
It's so crazy. So I didn't turn 21 until all of those things were like in place.
Okay, so you know nothing any different.
Yeah, I've just always been around like breweries. Like in college, there was a restaurant that had a brewery. I'm currently forgetting that Franklin's in Hyattsville.
Yeah.
And I, you know, as soon as I could drink, I would, you know, be able to go there, and I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, but I didn't know about like that backstory and that background because I never, you know, was able to go to those places anyway. So
And Franklin's, they've been around for quite a while. So places that were able to brew beer and serve it on site were brew pubs. So as long as 60%, I think, of your sales came from food, then you could serve beer. So that's what Brewers Art
was
brew
able
pub,
to do it.
Red Brick Station. So like when you think about like the places that are actually like sit down restaurants where you have a hostess and wait staff and things like that. So it, you know, now we can open a tap room without having to be a restaurant first.
Because you guys, I mean, you guys do serve food here, but it's not like the main attraction. Beer's the main attraction.
It's food. So we have
finger
sort
food.
Of hot food on Friday evenings and Saturdays.
I had the pit beef when I was here a few weeks ago. It was really good.
The food, it's amazing. And then the rest of the week we have things that, you know, the bartender can handle. So a lot of like smoked salmon, charcuterie plates, beef jerky, pickles, and then, you know, some more substantial things like we can do like wraps and some things like that. So it's definitely enough that you can make it a meal.
Yeah.
You can make it a snack. But it's never going to be something where you make a reservation and you're seated and and that whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, and also I think your space in particular is really cool because you have the downstairs, which is big and open, and then you have an upstairs that you can do events and the screening room and then the outside space, which I think is really interesting. Just having an outside space is really nice. Like just come out on a nice day, have a nice beer and sit outside, look around the area. It's cool. So what do you think the future of like breweries in the DMV looks like?
I think there are going to be a lot more. And
you don't think it'll ever get like oversaturated?
I mean, I think about bars, restaurants, you know, things like that. You know, it's 40 bars. 40 restaurants oversaturated, you know, for, you know, and we're not even close to that in this area. You know, my guess is it could handle, you know, a lot more than we have now. What it is going to do is because there will be more options out there, is that the people who are not putting out good enough beer,
they're not going to make it.
They're probably not going to make it. So before it was just a novelty enough that you were a brewery and somebody could go to a brewery and drink the beer there where it was made, you know, which is what is so appealing about going to a tap room. But as there become more and more and more, the quality is going to be very important, as is sort of the feel of the place, you know, wanting to be there. Is it, you know, unique? Is it authentic? Is it, you know, someplace that people actually want to hang out as well? So I think you'll probably end up seeing more of that. You know, that already started to happen with some places, but
some places that have shut down.
Yeah, but where it was just where the beer was almost undrinkable type thing, and then they don't make it very long.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I would say that your beer is very good. I like your beer.
Thank you. Yeah.
Your ambiance is really good, but like, what do you do in order to ensure that you know, obviously in terms of brewing, you're brewing to the highest quality that you guys can possibly do. Mm-hmm. But in terms of ambiance and creating a place that people want to come to and it feels appealing and you're doing the marketing around it, what do you guys do in order to make sure that you are, you know, living up to that expectation?
Yeah, so a big part is the range of beers. So always having a nice range of beers that appeal, you know, where everybody can walk in. And if you can't find a style of beer you like here, you probably don't like beer. But yeah, I definitely have to give a huge shout out to our sort of social media team, Megan Bird.
She's great.
Is amazing. And then we have a new intern, Reagan, from Towson. So the two of them are really doing amazing work. You know, I was trying to do the social media before, and I'm just not very good at it. So that's been really instrumental in sort of getting our message out there, and that sort of evolving. We definitely try to have a lot of sort of fun, interesting events like the comedy night that Mike Quinlan put on and is putting on in October.
And that's Drafts and Laughs. Yep. The next one, I believe, is October 11th.
Yep.
Here at Checker Spot.
Yeah. Yep. See, we got tickets online.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was on the first one. That's kind of how I stumbled into interviewing Judy here. Yeah. So
next Sunday we're doing a drag brunch.
Cool.
So really just some fun things. I was sort of joking with you about this before, but yeah, we don't really get out much. So we try to have things here that we want to do that. Like things that we would want to go to, because that's how we get to go to them.
Yeah. And there's a brunch going on right now downstairs, right?
Yeah. So Bottoms Up Bagels comes every third Sunday.
Cool. And that was just like an event you guys set up with them?
Yep. So they, we've been working with them since before we had a kitchen, and it's just sort of nice to have sort of this monthly Sunday brunch.
Yeah. For sure.
Bring people in and just sort of chill Sunday brunch. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you guys do events both in the downstairs space and the upstairs space, correct?
Yeah, so the upstairs space is more private events or things that need, you know, ticketed events, things like that, that you really want private space. And then other events we do that we want sort of everyone to be involved with, you know, we'll do downstairs or out in the brewery.
Yeah, and if anybody ever wants to watch the Ravens during a home game, you guys have an awesome projection screen and really great beers. You know, great beers, great food, and a great environment for Ravens games, big events. And I'm sure you guys will tap into that for, you know, other major things that go on, the Olympics or whatever. And
It's great viewing space.
It's awesome. It's like a, you know, big and you can actually watch the game, whereas a lot of the bars that you go to, you can't actually, like, A, it takes an hour to get a beer, and then B, by the time you're done drinking it, you know, you have to wait another hour, you miss the whole game.
And we are really lucky. We've had the same bartending staff since we opened.
Oh, that's really important.
And then the couple new people that we have brought on were significant others of our bartenders. So keeping it all in the family, and we've been,
I'm sensing a theme.
we've been so lucky that way. That's allowed us like some semblance of sanity and a life that we did not have.
I'm sure having that consistency and that, you know, level of trust in your employees allows you guys to kind of, like, obviously you're never going to take a full step back, but like to be able to just be like, we can breathe. You know, can you be the manager for the night or something like that?
No, and they have great ideas, and it's, you know,
it's cohesive.
We're always up for hearing any new ideas. How can we make things better? How, you know, we can't do everything by ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, that doesn't work for anybody.
No. And the people who think they can are the ones who often fail.
Yeah.
So what is what's in the future for Checker Spot?
We only hit 1 year, so.
I know, but you're.
What's in the future is going to be our second anniversary party.
Our second
next
year.
Next June, I feel like, we just opened up the upstairs May 5th. So while we had been open since the previous June, we've been under construction and dealing with permits and this whole other side, you know, while trying to start up and run, you know, the brewery and everything else that goes along with that, and taxes and you know, all that other fun stuff that doesn't go away. So getting through construction really just took a huge load off of all of us. So it's, you know, we could finally start booking events because we had the upstairs space, you know, we kept getting landlord delays. And so, you know, we couldn't book an event because we didn't know when it was going to be ready. Mm-hmm. So it's really, you know, we're starting to book private events. I think that's something that's going to really grow as we sort of get our feet under us. But I do feel like, you know, it's only been a few months since we've fully had our feet under us. So we're just trying to keep up with, you know, events.
Growing everything.
You know, keep it, continue to be somewhere that people want to go and stay fresh and
for sure.
Trying to keep up with everything. So hopefully after this year we can sort of see what's next after that. But sometimes it feels like you're just treading water to keep your head above.
So right now you're just trying to, you know, focus on the now. And I think that that's really important, especially for, you know, young businesses. Yeah. That's awesome. So I've got a few final questions that I kind of wrap up every interview with. What advice would you give to, say, a first-time brewer?
It's like somebody who wanted to open a brewery?
Yes, or, yeah.
Definitely spend as much time as you can with people who are commercial brewers who make beer that you like. You know, people who you want to emulate more. Mm-hmm. Like, take that time. Don't think you can just do it all by yourself. You know, people have been doing this for a long time, have made all the mistakes, mm-hmm. and you do not need to make the same mistakes over and over again because the market will not bear that for you.
Learn from those who came before you.
You need to make good beer.
Yeah.
That's probably the most important right now is mm-hmm. that the beer needs to be
good,
like really good.
Really good. And would you give that same advice to, you know, first time business owners and entrepreneurs, or is there an added element for just like owning a business?
Yeah, I mean, but I tend to be one of those people who really does my research and
you have a science background.
Very prepared for it. So I can only speak from that side. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm grateful for all the time I did have to do that. And that's probably just a personality thing. I think some people are more the don't do any research, jump in with feet first, and you might succeed and you might not.
Sounds like a bad business model.
I tend to, the more research you can do, whether it's business side, you know, I took time to teach myself basic accounting so that I could, you know, you do bookkeeping, you know, hire the right people. We have an amazing accountant and things like that, that, you know, where it is, things that are really important. Mm-hmm. Make sure the right person's doing them.
Yeah, I totally hear that. Well, thank you so much for speaking with me. You know, I love talking about beer. It's a topic that is super interesting to me, and I loved hearing about your business, and I love this brewery, and I can't wait to come back, bring all my friends, and have a couple more of these sours.
I know. We might make you perform for some beers.
I've performed for less. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Sam.
Thank you for listening to Charm City. If you are interested in being interviewed, or if you're a local business interested in sponsoring us, please reach out to charmcitypod@gmail.com.